What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you need something quick and convenient like my family does, my ultimate high-protein dinner hack is grabbing pre-marinated steak tips and making them extra crispy and charred in the air fryer while the inside stays juicy and medium rare. I can't say enough about the convenience of Omaha Steaks. Thanks to them, I always have the highest quality proteins on hand. Enjoy exceptional flavor in the convenience of Omaha Steaks during their spring savings event. Omaha Steaks is your weeknight win. And right now, you can get the world's best everyday protein during their spring savings event. Go to omahasteaks.com for an extra $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to shop their spring savings event and use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today, the host of the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman and gigantic turkey fanatic, Mr. Kevin Creeley. Kevin, dude, what's up?
Oh, man, I'm fired up to be talking about turkeys and not deer hunting.
What? You don't like deer hunting, dude?
Dude, I love deer hunting, but I'm a turkey hunter at heart, and since I started my show, I've been like throttle shy to put out turkey content. So now that it's like getting to be that time of year that it's appropriate to talk about turkey hunting, I'm like just fired up.
You're ready to go.
Yeah.
No doubt. What's the difference between deer hunters and turkey hunters? Is there a difference?
Man, I don't know. That's a tough one. I would say, you might argue with me on this one, but I would say turkey hunting probably requires more patience.
Really?
Yeah, I would think so.
I'm trying to see. I can agree with you in certain scenarios, but disagree with you in other scenarios. Like if you're waiting for a particular buck and you're passing, you know, little bucks, that might require more patience.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Dude, I'll be honest, dude. Like this is going to sound bad, but I have been fairly successful in my turkey hunting endeavors. And maybe to the point where it has been easy for me, right? Where like, I'm that guy who I'll walk into the timber, I'll listen for some gobbles, I'll walk right to the gobbles, I'll sit down, try to coax them in. If they don't come, then I go chase them a little bit or I flank them a little bit and try to get them, you know, within shooting range. Something comes in and I've been able to shoot them quite frequently at that level. Now, there's been some years where that I can disagree, right, with what I've just said, and I've hit a couple struggles, but dude, like, I can't tell you how many turkeys I have killed flying off the roost, landing, taking 10 yards coming towards me, and I've shot them right in the face. And then my turkey hunting is over before the sun's even up, and I am eating breakfast somewhere.
That's what we like. There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong
with that. I'll tell you a better answer.
Okay.
An even better answer now that I've had a second to stew on it. Turkey hunters versus deer hunters. One of the probably biggest things, and it's one of the things that makes me favor turkey hunting a ton, is like nowadays there's this big culture around deer hunting about like, oh, 185, 190-ish, whatever, you know?
Yes.
And in the turkey hunting realm, that simply doesn't exist. You don't shoot a gobbler and someone calls you and like, well, how long was his beard and spurs? Like, that's just not even part of the if he's got nice hooks, then we'll be like, dang, look at the daggers on that thing. Oh, that's cool. You know, and that's pretty much the end of that conversation. But nobody's busting out a tape and like, oh, you should have let that one walk. Like, that just doesn't happen. If it's a mature gobbler, it's getting shot. And I enjoy that. I like the culture around turkey hunting a ton. And I travel usually 3 to 4, sometimes 5 states a year. And that culture is pretty much widespread as far as everywhere I've been to turkey hunt, which is mostly just up and down the East Coast. And it's just a really good culture of people. And and there's, you know, there's different types of turkey hunters, of course. There's the guys that are shaking tail fans on fields and reaping them across and using a flock of decoys in a ag field and stuff like that. And then there's guys like myself that like just a shotgun propped up on their knee and a mouth call and doing it the old school way. And I'd rather not kill a turkey and hunt like that than kill one over a decoy in a field, me personally. But
dude, I used to talk shit on turkey hunting for a while there, but I think it was because I was so engulfed in deer hunting that I just kind of forgot about it. I was like hyper focused on chasing big giant bucks, but now that I've kind of come off that a little bit, I'm seeing the appeal of turkey hunting much more. So my goal this year is to hunt more turkeys. Just be honest. Like I'm gonna try to get my son out for his very first official turkey hunt where he's gonna be a potential shooter. My daughter's gonna come out with me as well. She's coming off of a great season last year, and I'm wanna get out during that, you know, some of the weekdays where the public land isn't so pressured by people, you know. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens over the course of this spring. And I might even hop across the river into Illinois or Wisconsin and maybe try to chase something.
I've heard people call Illinois land of the longbeards before.
Land of the longbeards. Okay.
Never heard that?
No, I haven't. I've heard people say that about Missouri and how good turkey hunting in Missouri is. But I haven't heard anybody talk about Illinois that way.
Yeah, it gets pretty dense from what I understand. I haven't personally experienced it, but I usually go south rather than west just because they opened before us in Virginia.
Yeah.
And so I'll go Georgia or Alabama and then the Carolinas before Virginia opens.
Yeah. What's your favorite state to hunt turkeys in?
Virginia, 100%. 100%. Obviously, that's driven from personal experience, and I'm very biased because that's where I learned to turkey hunt. Yeah. But I've hunted – last year I hunted 5 states. I haven't hunted anywhere – what's a dense, I don't want to blow up Virginia too much, but turkey hunting in Virginia is awesome. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, now you're the reason all the public land hunters are going to start bitching and complaining. Because Kevin clearly said, come on over to Virginia. Plenty of turkeys for everybody to hunt.
it is good, man. It's good. But I like down south too, but differently. Down south is extremely tough. I get my butt whipped every year. I'll kill a turkey here and there down south, but the majority of the time I'm getting my butt whipped. But the culture down there, everybody turkey hunts and everybody's a dang killer. It's not just like the woods are full of retards walking around, you know, whatever. Like everybody can yelp like they're Dave Owens and freaking is bottomland head to toe, and they got a custom red dot, and they've been turkey hunting since they were knee high, and just everybody's a killer down south, man. It's just a whole different culture.
I'll tell you what, man, something about the Southern boys and their love for turkeys, I don't understand it. Like the Midwestern guys, maybe it's because of opportunity, right? There's probably more deer hunting opportunity up here in the Midwest. And then, I don't know, maybe it's because we have the big giant antlers up here. Mm-hmm. And maybe the southern people don't have that as much to chase. I'm sure there's guys that still get geeked out by it, but southern states have always seemed to have really high populations in turkeys as well.
Yeah, I think it's kind of just one of those things, you either have it or you don't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've got some buddies that are extremely into deer hunting, but then come turkey season, they'd just rather sit at home or go, you know, fishing, play around a golf or whatever. Yeah, fishing, yeah. Whatever.
Yep.
But, yeah, some people just got the bug, and I've got it terrible, man. I can't not turkey hunt. There's no way.
Well, good for you. Good for you, bud. Before we get into the rest of the podcast, where we're going to start talking here about turkey hunting gear and equipment, I do want to send a huge shout-out to a couple of the partners here at the Hunting Gear Podcast, and that first one is Reveal Trail Cameras. If you're looking for a very easy-to-use cellular trail camera, man, you take it out of the box, you put the batteries in it, you scan the QR code on the camera, and you have a ready-to-go cell cam in a matter of minutes. Very easy setup, and as far as the picture quality, it's very good. The man, there's a technical term I'm missing here. What's that called when trigger speed? That's the one I'm looking for.
There it is.
Yeah, trigger speed. Good trigger speed. Very good camera. And from what I can see over the last couple of years of using them, I've noticed a decent battery life as well. And so something to go check out, tacticam.com/cameras, and check out the new 3.0 versions of the Reveal. And then we have Code Blue Sense. I'm a huge fan of the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit that now comes in a two-pack for convenience, along with their real and synthetic deer urines. They got tarsal glands, they got scent elimination products like sprays and laundry detergents. Whatever you like and whatever you feel comfortable with as far as scents is concerned, go check out codebluescents.com. Discount code NFC20, and then you'll be good to go. All right. Turkey gear. First, I want to start off by asking this question. You just got done with the wild or the NWTF convention in Nashville. You went there for a couple days and checked it out. Any cool, new, exciting products in the turkey world that once you saw it, you're like, dude, I got to have something like this?
Man, every year there's a lot of really good stuff that comes out. I've been to that show. This is the second time, but I flip through all the videos and check the new releases out and stuff of what people are dropping every year. And there's some cool stuff for sure. Probably the only one that really sticks out to me, and maybe I'm a little biased because I do own their turkey vest, but I got to give a shout out to Grounded Brand Outdoors. They make an awesome turkey vest.
Yeah.
And I've got their, I think, 2.0 model or something like that that I bought a few years back. And this year they came out with a chest pack, which is like a little bit more with the trend of the hunting industry of like minimalistic, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Yep. So like rather than having a big bulky turkey vest that covers your whole body and then a seat and 97 pockets that you just feel the need to fill with stuff, it's basically a chest pack with like a pocket for a slate call. Mm-hmm. It's got a pocket for a locator call, a couple pockets for diaphragm calls, and then it flips out and it's also a bino and rangefinder harness.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. And you actually can, it'll attach around kind of similar to a safety harness around like your mid waist. And mm-hmm. then you can attach a turkey seat to it as well, if you choose to. Yeah. And there's a bunch of different attachments that you can add on to it. And it eventually builds out to like basically a full blown turkey vest.
Yeah.
But it's nice that it gives you the opportunity to like break it down into smaller pieces, which like I could see being beneficial towards the later tail end of the season when it gets up in the 80s. And you want to shed a little bit of weight, you know, maybe be a little cooler. So that one really stuck out to me for sure.
Yeah. Man, I tell you what, there's something about this old school turkey vest that I have. It's not even a turkey vest. It's like a backpack, but it's got the L brackets, the steel L bracket frame in it. Mm. So when I sit down, I don't need a tree to lean up against. Oh, I nice. Can lean up against and I can slouch my back down. And so my eyes are level with my knees.
Yeah.
I mean, it's old, dude. Some of the zippers don't even work on it anymore. It's got a couple pockets where I keep my slate calls. Fun fact about me, I am not good or don't even care to attempt to try mouth calls.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, no worries.
So I am a box call, slate call guy. I'll just sit there on the ground, like one hand, one. I've kind of mastered the one hand little.
That's impressive.
Yep. And so then the turkey comes, and sometimes I get busted because I'm moving too much trying to get back at it. But anyway, so that's a good one to note. Did you happen to check, like, go by the Knight and Hale booth at all? That's an interesting company because they have, I had them on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and it sounds like that brand almost disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
And then now it's making this big comeback. Did you stop by their booth at all?
I believe I did, man. Be honest, that place is so dang overwhelming. Yeah. It is. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's insane. I mean, there's, I think they average 70,000 attendees now.
Yeah.
And the booths are shoulder to shoulder. So I'm sure I did, but I don't like, I can't like picture it in my brain, their exact booth and whatever products they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Because I know they're coming out with a lot of new stuff too, and I was just curious if you ran by it at all. Any other exciting products that you saw that you were interested in?
Man, something I thought was pretty cool is Spring Legion is making these chaps that are like boot chaps, you know. So if you're not wearing knee highs, like say you're the type of guy that likes to wear hiking boots. Like I like to wear hiking boots, like just ankle high hiking boots, just enough to give you some ankle support.
Yep.
If you're walking a lot, especially in hill country, that's a game changer as opposed to wearing like knee-high rubber boots.
Yep.
Knee-high rubber boots are awesome until you walk 4 miles, then they're not so awesome anymore when you're all blistered
fact.
Up.
You fact. Know?
So, but now, let's say you have to cross a couple creeks, or in my case, I hunt in a lot of ag country, and in the morning when that rye grass is up like a foot and a half, 2 foot tall, and the dew hits it and you're walking in an hour before sunlight, dude, you get soaked up to your thighs.
Yeah.
So you could wear that chap over the ankle part high of the hiking boot all the way up past your knee and then strap that thing down tight. And it folds up into a pretty small package. So you could take that, stick it in the back of your turkey vest or backpack or whatever it is that you're carrying until you don't need it, you know. And they're also snake proof. So that's a benefit, especially if you're down south.
That's a win. That's a win. Cool. Yeah, I've definitely been there before. I've done that during deer season too, when you're walking into the woods and you got to cut through some like CRP grass. And it's not frost, but it's wet. And you're like, oh, my God. You get to your stand, and you're soaked all the way through your base layers. And that really sucks. So
yeah, it takes a long time to get dry, especially if it's cold.
Yeah. Any other product from the NWTF?
I think those are probably the two that stuck out to me the most. If I sat here and thought on it for a while, I could probably come up with something. Yeah. My wife bought me a really sweet jacket, so that's cool.
Oh, yeah? Like, describe this jacket to me.
So it's a Mossy Oak Gamekeeper jacket. Kind of looks like the old school, like Carhartt mechanics jackets, you know, like the burlap with the collar. Yep. Yeah, like that.
Yep.
But it's like almost like a Game Warden green denim. And then all the trim around the pockets are bottomland. And that thing is just pimp. I love that jacket.
I can tell by the smile on your face, dude, that you love it. That's pretty sweet. Congratulations, man. Let's talk about what's in your pack. All right. When you're looking at, I don't know, picking up something new, let's just say something new, or maybe something old has worn out, or you're looking to pick up a new product for turkey hunting, what are some things that go through your head before you actually pay for it?
So are we talking like clothing? Are we talking calls?
Anything that you use to turkey hunt in.
Okay, well, just overall, general in life, I'm kind of a buy once, cry once type of guy. So I like to buy the nice product. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm not really like a cheap guy. And I'm not saying you can't kill turkeys and deer with cheap gear because people do it all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. But I like to buy nice gear. Maybe it's just because I wait all year to do this thing. Why wouldn't I want to have the nicest stuff to go do it and be comfortable?
Right.
So for me, it's like versatility. So like if let's say, for example, I'm looking at a pair of pants. I'm thinking like, okay, well, I want to be able to wear these pants when it's 40. Or 30 with a base layer, but I also want to be able to strip the base layer, wear these pants when it's 78, 79 degrees and not sweat like crazy.
Yep.
And then like I hunt in all kinds of diverse habitats. So I'll think like, okay, what if I have to walk through briars? Are these things going to get torn up the first time I walk through briars?
Yeah.
Are they going to be comfortable walking 4 miles in a day? So I'll just kind of try to play out every scenario that I can, because I'm hard on gear, man. So I'll think about like every scenario that I can that I'm going to put this gear through before I make the purchase, because some of this stuff's not cheap, let's be honest. You know.
Yep.
And so like, is it going to last? That's the biggest thing to me, because I like to hold on to gear for, you know, at least 5 years if I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fact. Are you brand loyal, or do you switch it up every once in a while?
Yeah, I'm not so brand loyal, man. I like, usually if I'm buying clothes, I like to touch it, feel it and stuff. I don't really like to order stuff online. So that's one reason why I like going to these conventions, is because you can go test and try a bunch of stuff. But no, I'm not really brand loyal. If it feels good, looks like it's going to hold up, I like the pattern on it, I like the storage on it and stuff like that, then I'll rock and roll with it.
Yeah. Okay. What about things like mouth calls? Like, do you go back to the same brand all the time? Like, if it's, because how long do you get out of a mouth call, you think? How many seasons?
I'd say some people get multiple years. I certainly do not. And probably the main reason is when I keep a mouth call, I hold it like this, and I keep it right in my cheek pretty much all day.
Yeah.
And it just rests there in my cheek. And the latex and the prophylactic reeds and stuff aren't really designed to be under moisture 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
So I'll play with it in my mouth, you know, as I'm walking through the woods, hold it with my teeth, pop it in and out, calling and stuff like that. So I'll wear them out pretty quick. I've seen guys that'll clean them, stick toothpicks in between the reeds to keep them separated, keep them dry and stored away in a nice shelf or something, and get a couple years out of them. I don't. I never expect to get more than a season out of a mouth call.
Gotcha. Is there a brand you prefer?
Nope. Oh, man, I've got all kinds of brands. I also make mouth calls, so I make some of my own. I'm not the greatest at it. I'm no Grand National call maker by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But I like to toy with making mouth calls. Basically, when I look for a call, I don't really look for a brand. I look for a cut style and a tension that I like. I like a low tension, and I like a right-sided opening combo cut, and that's about the only thing that works for me. If you've never checked it out, there's a YouTube video that Shane Simpson did called Mouth Call Mechanics, and he describes how to find the channel of airflow that works for your particular anatomy. And when I watched that, that was a freaking game changer for me, and I found out that a right-sided combo cut's just the only thing that really works for me. So like, a lot of the companies will market 7 different types of cuts, and then guys will buy the 5 packs with all these cuts, and then come to find out only really one of them sound good. And it's not really because of the design of that call, but more so because of how your mouth is designed, I guess, better, at lack of a better word.
Yeah.
So no, for me, it's not really brand. Like, at the NWTF, I probably picked up a dozen or more calls, and I just walked around and I'll pick them up, poke the reeds, feel what the tension feels like, look at the cut. And then, you know, you can't really try out a mouth call, you know, kind of buy it. So I'll look at the cut, feel the tension on the reeds, and if it looks good, then I'll rock and roll with it.
Yeah. That's one thing that I have, and it's, I'm not a turkey guy. So this is an interesting question for me. Is it like all these different cuts, right? You said combo cut. I've seen, like, when I was talking with Knight and Hale, they had like 10 different combinations of cuts, and, you know, one was a squeaky hen and one was a, you know, the old mistress or whatever the case is, all different cuts on the latex there. But can you really tell the difference in the sound quality of these cuts?
So a good turkey caller is going to be able to make the same cat sounds regardless of the cut. The reason for the cuts, right, is like, you've got several layers on a mouth call. And for those who are listening audio, you probably can't see what I'm showing here, but I'm holding up a mouth call. Anyhow, on the right side here, you can see that bottom reed, right? That bottom reed is where your key sounds come from. That's that soft, like, noise.
Yeah.
And then the top reed, that's where your rasp actually comes from, the yak, 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 yak.
Okay.
So you cover that key side with the bottom, or sorry, with the top of your tongue. You push it up and cover that key side. And that's how you get the clean front end of the yelp, that key. And then when you drop your jaw and release the tension, that's when it activates the top side of the reed and you get the yap. And then you roll that over, and that's how you get that key, yap, 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 yap. And that makes it sound like a realistic yelp. So the reason I say that is the cut differences, it just changes where you place your tongue on the call. So like a V cut, for example. A V cut, you cannot make a realistic turkey call sound on. It's a call that typically novice callers will go to because you can throw it in and just kind of blow air and it'll just make a raspy yak, 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 and kind of sounds somewhat like a turkey.
Yeah.
But without that high front end on the top side of the yelp, it's not going to sound realistic. So like a combo cut is going to be designed for somebody who works better with their tongue slid off to the side to find that key. A bat wing cut is going to have an opening on both sides, so it's going to work best for someone that can shove their tongue straight up into the call. And very similar to a ghost cut is just one small opening in the middle. So if your air channel flows like mostly center, then a ghost cut's going to work better for you. Then they have reverse combo cuts. And then beyond that, to answer the other half of your question, the raspy stuff, the squeaky stuff, that all basically comes down to the tension of the reeds. When you build a mouth call, you crank down a certain amount of tension before you put your bracket on, clamp it down, set your tension, and then put your cuts in the call. So how tightly the reeds are stretched is going to make it more or less raspy. And typically, the looser the reeds, the more raspy the call is going to be. Kind of tailor it towards sounding more like an older hen, right? Like an old boss hen that's real raspy and sounds like she's been smoking a pack of marbles every day for the last 5 years.
All right. All right. I'll have to start playing around with a mouth call. I'm going to go buy one, actually. The next time I'm at a local store here, I'm going to pick one up and I'm going to start playing with it. All I know is what I'm going to do is I'm going to get frustrated and I'm going to be pissed and I'm going to take it out and I'm just going to let it sit there until... for a year, probably for an entire year. So, what other type of calls other than a mouth call do you carry with you every hunt?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Yeah, so I carry 4 calls. I carry one in my truck and 3 in my pack. Okay. In my truck, I have a box call. I don't really ever take the box call into the field. I don't really see a great field application for it. Not saying it doesn't work. People certainly kill turkeys with them. Excuse me. The box call, I call it my road call. I leave it right sitting on top of my center console, and when I'm riding roads and locating, I can get out and I can cut extremely loud on a box call. You know, you cover your thumb on one side and smack it and cut real loud.
Yep.
Do like 3 and 4 note yelps, and you can just get wicked loud on a box call. So I like using that for locating, and then I also like using locator calls. I'll use my mouth a lot of the times and just and just do owl hoots with my mouth. Sometimes I like to use a tube, especially on public land, just because I don't like people hearing me owl hooting. So if I have an owl hooter, and realism, I firmly believe that realism does add an effect to your calling. And you can sound, obviously, a lot more realistic on a hoot tube. So for the 4 calls, box call is my road call. That one rides in the truck with me. And then in my turkey vest, I carry an owl call, locator call, or a crow call, usually an owl call. I carry about 5 mouth calls because I constantly wear them out, but that's going to count as 1 call. And then a pot call. And I use a glass surface pot call. I don't prefer the slate. I prefer the glass. I think you can get a lot louder with it. And again, that's just for walking ridges and locating. That's really the only time I'll use the pot call. I'll use it to, like, I'll walk a ridge, cut extremely loud on it. I'll locate a turkey. And then once I make my setup, I'm switching completely to the mouth call. And that's what I'm going to finish the turkey with.
Gotcha. Okay. That's, I want to be a real turkey hunter someday. So I feel like I need to learn how to do the mouth call. Because I'm 100% pot call right now. And I believe I have a... I believe 1 is glass and 1 is slate. And I either on a rope with me, and I have one striker, and I slip it into these pockets and I go. And then I have a little piece of sandpaper that I take with me. And when they start getting, you know, like when they don't start making noise anymore, I'll rub them down, and then that fixes the problem. But have you found an owl call or a crow call working better as far as a locator call?
An owl call, 100%, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If you can. But the thing about an owl call is everybody just wants to do the 8-count hoot, which is traditionally, if you don't know the 8-count hoot, the old saying is, who cooks for you, who cooks for y'all? Yeah. It's the that noise. Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of other diverse stuff you can do with an owl call. And I've found that, like, I'll hit the 8-count hoot, and if nothing gobbles, I'm not just going to keep walking. I'll stand there for a minute, and I might do like a 5-note, just really loud hoots. And then I'll switch from that to a laugh. I'm sure you've heard a barred owl laugh in the woods, right?
Yep.
So you can learn how to laugh on a tube really well just by opening and closing your hand and changing the back pressure to get that that laugh noise.
Yep.
And a lot of times, like, I'll try the 8-count. If that doesn't work, I'll wait a couple minutes. I'll try the 5-count really loud, and then I'll switch to the laugh, and then pow, it'll rip one out of them.
Yeah.
The crow call, I'm not as much of a fan of, just because, I mean, you just hear crows all day long. You know what I mean?
Like, and in my experience, conditioned from them.
Yeah, yeah. In my experience, they're not really gobbling at the crow unless the crow is, like, right on top of their head. Yeah. And, like, that crow is specifically harassing that turkey. Because I've seen it where you've got a turkey strutting out in a field or in open timber, and a crow will, like, dive down and, like, right on top of him. And then he'll kind of, pow, like, rip one off at that crow.
Yeah.
But then a flock of crows will fly over and get to cutting up, and he won't gobble at it.
Yeah.
But it seems like that owl hoot, man, it just pulls it out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what else pulls gobbles out of turkeys? Slamming your truck door.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, man. I
got to tell you this first story. And if you've listened to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast this week, I've told this story over and over, so you're probably sick of it. But my uncle was the first guy I ever went turkey hunting with. And we get out of the car or out of his truck, and sun's coming up, and I'm thinking, hey, we got to get into the woods. Like, what are we doing here? And he knew exactly what he was doing. So he leaves his truck door open. I get out. I'm real quiet. I shut my door real quiet. He lights up a cigarette. He smokes it down, throws it, and then he walks over. He loads his gun, puts it over his shoulder, gets his pack on, takes a piss, and then he slams his truck door as hard as he possibly could. And, you know, like, there's just like two or three of them go off, and he's like, this way. we'd go in that direction, and we'd get on him. And so it was pretty interesting to see the, but then he also was really good at what you did. He used a crow call, and he also had an owl call. Well, nice. With his voice that he would do. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to leg off of that and tell a quick story if you don't mind.
Yep, go for it.
So, the shot goblin thing, I mean, that's the term we use, right? Shot gobble across the turkey hunting industry. I'm such a big fan of it that it's actually my license plate on my truck is shot gobble. But I love that they gobble at random stuff, man. It's so cool. And I remember a hunt very vividly last year. My buddy and I, we saw a longbeard strutting across a neighbor's field. And he was going towards a piece of timber that we lease. So I was like, hey, man, let's loop around, get in the backside of that timber, go up, see if we can't yelp him into the woods, you know? And we're walking up, and I kind of had dropped a pin on the field from the road of where the turkey was, because I knew once we got around the backside and got in the timber walking up, we weren't going to be able to get that close, because that turkey can see into that open timber really well. It was like white oaks.
Right.
And so I was like, I want to kind of walk somewhat diagonal towards the turkey rather than linear. And we were walking up, and I'm like, man, where's he at? I can't remember where he's at in the field. He might have moved. It took us a while to get around. I pulled out the owl call. I tried all three calling sequences. He didn't gobble at it. I didn't want to try a turkey call yet because I didn't want to really give away our location.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so I tried a crow call. He still didn't gobble. We're standing there thinking about what to do. And that road that we had just spotted the turkey on, an 18-wheeler came down, and he slowed down for the curve right there. And hit the Jake brake, and that turkey, pow, and he was 80 yards. he was 80 yards slam in front of us, and I was like, perfect, buddy, sit down. You know?
Yeah. All these dumbasses going out and buying turkey calls when all you need is a semi to just Jake brake around a curve. Hell yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Anything else we need to talk about calls? Like, is there a beginner call versus a more advanced call? For a beginner versus maybe someone who's experienced?
Well, the thing about calling is you can be pretty conservative with it. It doesn't take a whole lot of calling to kill a turkey that's in the right mood.
Yeah.
So I would say if you're not confident in your mouth calling abilities, then I would just call really conservatively.
Yep.
And if you're not confident at all with a mouth call, then just use whatever you're confident with. Don't feel like you need to use a mouth call. Yeah. If you can just do a couple soft clucks and maybe some decent yelps on a pot call, right, and you get the turkey to gobble, then you can probably just shut up and sit there, and he'll mm-hmm. commit after a while.
Right, right. Decoys. You said you don't like using them. Why not? Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything against them. Mm-hmm. If I were to be hunting with like a kid, then I would probably throw decoys out. Sometimes when I hunt with my wife, or at least I used to, she's becoming quite the killer nowadays, mm-hmm. that we don't really need to do that. But it can make for a really easy hunt. And if you're trying to get some footage of turkeys, it can make for a really easy way to take that turkey's attention off of you. Me personally, it just takes away from the hunt a little bit. Yeah. I always say that I hunt deer for meat and I hunt turkeys for fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to hunt them in the way that I think is the most fun. And the most fun way for me to hunt them is to kill them with woodsmanship and calling.
Yeah.
So the decoys kind of just take away from that aspect a little bit for me personally. Yeah. But do they work? Absolutely they work. Yeah. Man, they work great.
So if you were going to take a kid out, let's say, and or a first timer, and you wanted to do the whole blind decoy thing, because kids obviously move around, what mm-hmm. what's your decoy setup look like? What decoys are you pulling into the woods with you?
Most of the time, just a single half strut Jake.
Okay.
If I want to mix it up, make it look a little more advantageous on like a field edge setting, then it would be a half strut Jake and a hen. Mm-hmm. And that's just basically the gobbler's going to see it from across the field and think he's going to hear you calling. You're going to be hen calling, right? That'll catch his attention. He looks across the field. He sees the hen decoy, and then he sees a half-strut Jake, like, working that hen, and he's not going to like that. If it's a dominant tom, he is absolutely 100% of the time going to come to that.
Yeah.
Strutter decoys absolutely work, too. I'm not a big fan of them. I just think it's, like, almost purely cheating, honestly.
Yeah.
They work so well. A lot of states are banning that stuff, like, you know, putting full fans on decoys, holding up full fans. They call it reaping. They call it all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But some states are straight up banning it for the dangerous aspect of it, I imagine, more than the ease of harvest. But, for me, half-strut Jake, that's going to be my go-to in the timber or in the field.
Yep. Yep, that makes sense. Let me ask you a question. Outside of those decoys, are there any other decoy, what's the word I'm looking for? Like setups that you may use, and how do they like different in the first week of the season versus the last week of the season?
Let me think on that for a second. Well, the biggest thing with setting up is I don't want to set up linear to a turkey. You might have heard me say that earlier, and I don't know if this is going to answer your question, but I'm going to try. I like to put something in between the turkeys and me. So like, a field is a little bit more challenging because the turkey can see the world when he's mm-hmm. in a field, right?
Right.
But if I'm in like a timbered setting, for example, like let's say I was calling him down a logging road. I locate the turkey with an owl hoot. He sounds like he's 100 yards straight down this logging road. And I set up and I can see 90 yards. So he must be just around that bend. Well, if I looked behind me and there was another bend in the logging road, then I would want to get around that bend and then set up and start turkey calling at him. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is, turkeys can see real good. That's what they're good at, is seeing and hearing, you know. So if he comes around that first bend and he can see 100 yards down an open logging road, he has no reason to commit down there, because he's like, well, I can see the whole road. There's no hen down there, you know, because you're hiding up against a tree. But if I'm around that bend, another thing they can do really well is pinpoint a sound, like to the leaf that you're sitting on.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of biologists talk about it, and like it is incredible. They're like internal GPS of pinpointing noises. And so if you're around that curve, it'll entice them more, like kind of pique their curiosity of like, man, I can hear and I can tell she's around that bend and I can't quite see over there. So early season and late season, I'm going to do that. Another thing is just getting uphill of the turkey if you can, if you're in a hill country setting, if you can, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
You can't always, but being downhill of them, not great, because they can get to the edge of that topography, look down and see way better than you can. And they're going to scan that whole thing and then turn around, gobble, and walk in the other way.
Yep. Yep. I gotcha. Do you want a hen decoy versus a tom decoy late season, or just like a lone hen?
I don't like a lone hen most.
Or a lone Jake. That's what I meant. Half strut Jake.
Yeah. Okay. I would do either the half strut Jake in the hen or just the half strut Jake. And the reason for that is simply, if you have the lone hen out there and your hen calling and that tom comes around and he sees that hen decoy, Well, then he can just stand there and drum and strut, mm-hmm. and he's calling that hen to him. And then he's like, why the heck is she just standing in the middle of the road? I'm calling at her, because he's drumming and doing all kinds of stuff that we might not even be able to hear.
Yeah.
Calls that he's making at this hen decoy that you've got out there. Whereas if he sees the half strut Jake with the hen, that's going to pique his aggression, you know?
Yeah.
And he's going to be like, I got to go over there and whip his tail and take that hen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's, I don't really do a whole lot of lone hen decoy, but.
Okay. From a camo standpoint, right? There's how I think camo works for deer hunting, and then there's how I think camo works for turkey hunting. I think camo for turkey hunting is way more important.
100%.
And having a breakup, especially if you're not in a blind and you're on the ground doing run and gun type stuff. Have you found a camo pattern or a specific camo brand that you like or that you feel confident in the timber?
I think a lot of it comes down to personal preference of like what brand people are loyal to and what they think looks cool. I like Mossy Oak Bottomland personally, and I like Greenleaf, which is bottomland with little green leaves on it, you know?
Yeah.
And Mossy Oak Obsession's really good. At the end of the day, you just want to look like the base of a tree, because that's what you're sitting at, is the base of a tree, right? Yep. Bottomland looks like the base of a tree. If you're in a forest with a lot of undergrowth, little saplings and green stuff growing up, greenbrier, stuff like that, something like Greenleaf or Mossy Oak Obsession can be awesome. I don't think it ultimately matters. I've taken buddies out turkey hunting who have like the oldest Walmart camo, and we've killed turkeys. I think as long as you're sitting still more than anything and you're at the base of a tree, I think the biggest thing is not putting the sun in your face, because you put the sun in your face and you're going to light up, you know?
Yeah.
I think it really just comes down to like personal preference. I mean, my personal preference is Mossy Oak Bottomland and Greenleaf, but I think it'll all work.
What other types of, turkey equipment or gear that you use on a regular basis or might recommend that we haven't covered already?
So one thing on the subject of clothes is permethrin bug spray. That's huge,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Permethrin is so freaking important. I soak my stuff down 2 weeks before the season, hang it up to dry, and then seal it in a tote, so I hope that some of that stuff doesn't emit off of there.
Mm-hmm.
I like to carry a thermocell, especially if I'm down south. Thermocells are good, and I'll carry like a little tiny palm hand spray of like off or something that'll just fit in my vest.
Yeah.
For if that stuff gets really bad. Back on the subject of clothing, gloves and a mask are extremely important. Yeah. You want to be able to wear a mask or paint your face. I guess some guys are into that. I don't like face paint. I hate when you touch it and it gets on your hands and then it gets on my gloves and that irritates me. But some guys like the face paint. If they don't like to wear a mask, that's fine. But I would say mask and gloves are very important. For gloves, I like low profile gloves, like, you know, not very thick ones. Mm-hmm. And I always, if it doesn't already come that way, I'll cut the index and the middle finger out right at the knuckle so that my two fingers can stretch through. Just gives you a little bit more dexterity for like working a pot call, finding the safety, finding the button on the side of your red dot, finding the trigger, stuff like that.
Right.
Well, one thing we really haven't talked about at all is boots. Okay. We talked about hiking boots and chaps a little bit in the beginning, but as far as boots, like there's a lot of different preferences, guys. Some guys like knee-high rubber boots, and they have their benefit. They're lightweight. If you're walking like we were talking in the beginning of the show through a dewy field, then that can be extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I like wearing hiking boots, like I mentioned, with chaps because it's comfortable.
Yeah,
you can take the chaps off once you're in the timber, and then you can hike all day.
Yep.
Snake boots are freaking awesome. They serve both purposes. They're leather, they're waterproof, they're snake proof, they're knee high, so they keep you dry, and they make some really good lightweight ones. I've got some my wife bought me like 3 years ago, I think off of Academy Sports or whatever it's called .com.
Okay.
And they're like a leather, almost like a cowboy boot style. And then it's got a snake chap that comes all the way just below my knee. Mm-hmm. And they're in Mossy Oak Bottomland, and I freaking love those boots. They're lightweight, and every year I clean them with saddle soap and then condition them with saddle leather, and they've lasted a really long time, and I beat the crap out of them. So
yeah. Yeah. Ultimately that's what I look for, is shit you can beat up and then it still is good, if you know, especially if you take care of it, man. I had a pair of Crispy boots, you know, they're hiking boots, but I had them for 5 years, man. And I would just, I don't know if you're supposed to do this or not. Every year I'd power wash them down, and then I would spray, liquid, waterproofing.
Like the kiwi stuff? Is that what you were using?
It came in a like a spray bottle.
Okay.
And I would spray down, but it was liquid waterproofing, and then it would get on mm-hmm. there, and I guess it would dry up and then be a little bit. It never worked as good as the real thing, but it worked pretty damn good, and it allowed me to get 5 years out of a single pair of boots. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed that. Enjoyed, you know, doing that and keeping the boots longer. And then, you know, like you said, cry once, buy once for a new pair of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every year I buy I go on Amazon and I get a yellow tub of saddle soap, because I've got two pairs of boots I wear every season, the leather snake boots and leather hiking boots. Yeah. And I rinse them off with a garden hose and I scrub them down with that saddle soap while they're wet, and it gets real sudsy. Mm-hmm. That cleans out the laces and the leather, and I even clean out the inside so they don't stink. Rinse them out, and I'll let them dry in front of a fan or on a boot dryer for like a day. And then I order on Amazon. It's this little red aerosol can that Kiwi makes. It's like a boot polishing company. And it's real similar to what you said, just waterproof and spray. I think it's like $7 for a can. And it'll do both pairs of boots, no problem, and then some. Yeah. And once they're dry, I just soak them down in that top to bottom. And it works really well.
Gotcha. All right, let's see here. We talked camo. We talked calls. We talked decoys. We talked boots.
We can talk in the pack, stuff we carry.
Yeah, what do you carry?
If you're on private ground or you're on public ground that permits it, pruning shears are freaking awesome. I definitely recommend a pair of pruning shears. Like I said, some places you can't use them on public grounds. You can't prune stuff, but that can be pretty sweet. Like if your turkey gobbles and you turn around and look at your setup and go, okay, that's the best spot, but there's three saplings growing up, or I'm not going to have a shooting lane, or you get sat down and there's something grown up in the way, you can pull it out of the vest, sneak up there, prune it real quick, and then get right. You know, so that's a really good thing to carry. I don't wear a headlamp into the woods typically, but I like to have one with me. So if I have to like cross a creek or something, I don't know if it's true or not. Could be a superstition. I get paranoid about a light being on my head walking through. I don't with deer hunting for whatever reason, but with turkey hunting, they're up in the trees and I get weird about a headlamp. So I like a headlamp that has a flashlight mode, obviously, but then can also alternate to like a green or a red LED.
Yep.
And I'll take it off and kind of cup it in my hand to just let a little tiny bit of light through, and hold it down by my knees so it's just lighting up my feet. So if I need to cross some like creek or something where I need to see, I'll have that. Toilet paper, man. You got to have toilet paper.
That's so important. I'll take it a step further. I got these things. They're biodegradable. They're wet wipes.
Okay.
But they're biodegradable. So they get in there real good and get you real clean. Even better than what toilet paper does. So, over a handful of, you know, months or whatever, it dissolves back into the ground, says it's environmentally safe, whether it is or isn't. I think it is. So
yeah,
those are badass. Dude wipes are.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I keep pairing my truck or a pack.
Yep. There you go.
I'll take it a step further than that. Uh-oh. If you want to prep yourself for a day of hiking and walking in the turkey woods, baby powder.
Maybe even some Vaseline.
I've never done Vaseline.
Baby powder.
I'm a big fan of baby powder.
Yeah. Vaseline's for the second or third day of a long turkey hunt when you got some chap going on. You're like, God, this sucks. I didn't put any baby powder on anywhere. Now I need some Vaseline to lube up. And then you're sprinting through the woods real nice and easy.
lubed up.
What else is I'm you know, like water. I'm taking water with
snacks,
me.
Man. Yeah, definitely snacks. Water and snacks.
Yeah.
I like to carry like two water bottles. I carry one on each side. Sometimes I'll carry a Gatorade. I don't love carrying sugary stuff just because it can kind of gum up your mouth, and I run a mouth call a lot. So, but water is an absolute necessity. I mean, obviously for keeping hydrated, but also like I just mentioned, if you get kind of cotton mouth, then it gets a little bit trickier to run a mouth call. So it's good to have.
Absolutely. What else?
What else do I carry? Let me see. I got some notes written down. Oh, extra socks. That's a good one.
Yep.
Extra socks, man. If you do happen to get your feet wet and you're 2 miles from the truck, that sucks, you know? And maybe the boots are wet, so the extra socks isn't going to 100% fix the issue. But I don't know about you, but I put a dry pair of socks on, I feel like a brand new man.
Brand new. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a game changer.
Absolutely. Man, I'm trying to sit here and think of what's in all in my stuff. You know, we've covered just about everything as far as the necessities are concerned. Is there a product, like all the stuff that we talked about, right, today, and is there a product that you take with you but you don't need it? Like you take it with you and you're like, okay, how about this? Other than your shotgun and your shells, I tell you, you can only take one, and the clothes you're wearing, okay, the clothes you're wearing. You can only take one other thing with you into the woods right now. What is it?
Mouth call.
Mouth call, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's going to be a mouth call, and that's going to be it. Because I can cut loud on it. I can tree yelp real soft on it. I can do all the things on a mouth call.
Yeah.
Another important one we didn't mention is binos.
Binos
are awesome. Obviously for a field setting, but then even too for a timber setting. Like if you get to a point where you're like, oh, I can see a long ways. Well, turkeys can hide pretty good sometimes. So if you can throw the binos up, do a quick scan, rather than just walk up to that next ridge and then you hear the terrible, you know, and you're like, dadgummit. And another thing that some people neglect to carry in turkey season that I personally carry is a rangefinder.
Yeah.
Might not always find it extremely necessary, but sometimes when you make that setup and you're like thinking to yourself, okay, when he gets right there, I can kill him.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
And then you start to have that internal argument, like, is that 50, 60, mm-hmm. is that 40? You know what I mean? Yeah. So just a quick check, like, okay, 42. So he gets past that stick and he's in gun range, you know what I mean? Or whatever that you're comfortable with your pattern at. Yeah. I'll carry binos and a rangefinder. Like I had one last year, a turkey I missed in Alabama. I didn't pull the rangefinder out. It kind of happened really fast. I located him. He struck. He was on the other end of a logging road right around a bend, pretty much the scenario I just painted earlier. I set up off the logging road, tucked in the timber. Everything was perfect. Got the red dot kicked on. I got set up. Everything's sounding lovely. I can hear him drumming up the road. He came into the curve. I guessed it was gun range. I shot, clean missed, watched the turkey fly off, pulled out my rangefinder and clicked it, and it was 62 yards. It just looked closer because of the way it's set up, and he was full strut, and there was a little bit of topography, and it just full-blown tricked me.
Yeah.
And in a field setting, a lot of times they look like they're 30 when they're full strut, and they're actually 65. It'll trick you.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple times when I first started getting into turkey hunting. I'm like, God, he's so close, and he's not even close. He's like 70 or whatever. So, heck yeah, dude. Well, we got a good start. right? We understand the products that we probably need, some of the stuff that you use on a regular basis every season. Thanks for coming on and schooling us about some of the gear that you saw at the NWTF convention, some of the gear that you use, how you use it, and anything else we need to add before we shut her down today?
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
I don't think so, man. I think turkey hunting can be, you can approach it as minimalistically as you'd like. I typically find that as the season progresses, my vest gets lighter and lighter. Or just stuff that I, at the beginning of the season, I mean, you'll load that sucker down. Most turkey vests have about 93 pockets, and you want to fill every single one of them, right?
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily have to. And sometimes I'll end up, by like week three in the season, ditching the vest entirely. And just like, all I've found myself using is this locator call and this mouth call and my shotgun.
Yeah.
I tell you one. I will mention one more thing.
Yep.
A gun sling is a benefit. I definitely recommend one that has a quick disconnect.
Yeah.
Because I will personally, I like to carry my gun on the sling when I'm walking long distance. But when I get set up on a turkey, every single time, part of my ritual is to pop the sling off at the quick disconnects and throw it at my feet.
Yeah.
I'll throw it on top of my ankle so I don't get up and forget the thing. But I don't like having that, like, if I move, the sling swings underneath the gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just added movement that doesn't look natural in the woods. So I like a quick disconnect sling. Other than that, man, I think we covered her pretty good.
Perfect. Perfect. If you guys want to listen to Kevin talk about turkey hunting for the next 8 months, go over go over to the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman podcast. He's doing great things over there right here on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. Kevin, man, good luck this upcoming turkey season. Hopefully you tag out in all the states, and I appreciate you coming on today.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.